See, people talk about sacrifice. I used to tell people, I sacrificed so much. I went to law school. I borrowed $100,000. You know, all my friends were having fun. No, I didn't. You know, I know guys that slept in their car to build their business.
Right.
They didn't sacrifice. They invested in themselves. They actually believe in themselves more than anybody else. I'm betting on myself all the time and investing in myself. Savings is an investment in self. It's allowing you to build income at an exponential accelerated rate.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Money Mondays. We have a special guest today, Mr. Dave Meltzer, one of the only humans in the world that I call for advice over and over and over and over and over for the last 15 years. We also have our guest host, Mr. The Real Tarzan.
What's up, guys?
So, the way we're going to do this is Dave is going to give us the quick 2-minute bio. I normally take him like half an hour to do his bio. We're going to do a 2-minute bio so we can get straight to the money.
I love it. Well, I'm a speaker, author, entrepreneur with an eclectic background, but mainly utilizing my technology experience. I ran the most notable sports agency, ran Samsung's first phone division, just this eclectic background at the highest level. But what I'm doing today is utilizing all the dummy tax I paid. I also lost over $100 million to help other people. So my mission in life is to empower people like you two to empower 1,000, to empower 1,000. 1,000 times 1,000 is 1,000,000. 1,000,000 times 1,000, 1,000,000,000. I'm going to change the world. I'm not afraid to tell people I'm going to change the world. And here's how I'm going to teach people to be happy, because that's my mission. Power guys like you to teach people to be happy. It's three things. One, make a lot of money. Two, help a lot of people with that money. And three, have a lot of fun with that money. If I can teach people what I know about that through my journey, we're all going to have a collective consciousness, a happy world.
Well, I think I need you to be our co-host of our podcast, because that's the only three things we talk about.
Yes.
So as we go into the Money Mondays, as you guys know, there are only three topics here. How do you make money? How do you invest money? And how do you give it away to charity? So since that's exactly what you do, let's walk one by one. How does Dave Meltzer make money?
Well, first, it's a self-inventory. I think too many people look outside themselves. See, if you really understand your skills, your knowledge, and your desire, then you can align it with three things. What's doing well today, what's stable today, and what you think is doing well in the future. And so I tell people all the time, let's take the time to learn where your skills, your knowledge, and your desire are. Let's go to the stock market, see what's doing well, easy to find. Even easier to find what's stable. You know, if a stock hasn't moved in the last 6 years, that's a stable industry, career, or job. And then finally, let's talk about what you think is going to be doing well in the future. Once we know that, it's timing and risk tolerance. And you got to take inventory of your own timing and risk tolerance, because you'll never lose if you align what you do with your timing and risk tolerance. You may lose your money, but you'll never lose.
Hmm. Love that.
We're sitting right now at SoFi Stadium in the parking lot. Why are we here?
Well, I made a very risky decision, and I took a 10-year lease sight unseen before anything was built.
Oh, wow.
Steve Jones, Jerry Jones's son, for years has tried me to get down to the Star to get an office there, which is their practice facility. And I said, well, not until you get to LA, man. I'm not living in Frisco, Texas. Right. We got plenty of In-N-Out burgers here. And so he called me one day, and he said, guess what? I got your office. I said, where? He said, LA. I said, where? He said, Legends got the deal for the new stadium. I said, oh, cool. Send me over the details. He goes, well, they're kind of vague. I said, oh, but here you have a 10-year lease. You got to trust me. You got to pay a year up front.
Wow.
And I took a chance, which almost came to bite me in the butt when COVID hit and we couldn't get into the office.
Right.
Oh,
yeah. But beyond that, by far, this is one of the best business decisions I've made on so many levels.
So Tarzan, you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of views on all of your social media. When someone like Dave casually says, I lost $100 million, but I'm going to teach people why. What is something that you want to ask someone that casually lost $100 million?
Like, when do you know when to stop losing money?
You're always going to lose money, right? So for me, I tell people all the time, look, if you are not making mistakes, then God's made the mistake. You shouldn't be here. So the idea of losing money is it's an investment. I know we're going to get into how do we invest our money. So I'm always looking at mitigation of risk. In other words, needing to know my timing and risk tolerance. The biggest mistake I made, how I lost that much money, is I didn't have a timing and risk tolerance. Let me explain real quickly, because you guys know gambling. you know, how many times does someone in crypto, they buy something for 10 cents and it went to $10? And then they sold it $10. That's a remarkable return, by the way.
For sure.
And then it went to $20 and they feel, remember I said, you're going to feel, they feel like they're a loser and they lost.
Right.
Where if you buy a lottery ticket for $2, 8 p.m. on Saturday, that you have a 1 in a billion chance to make a $500 million. When you lose your $2, you're happy.
Yeah.
Because you got exactly what your timing and risk tolerance was. So for me, it was a matter of not knowing my timing and risk tolerance. And then secondly, this is the biggest lesson I'm going to tell you today. I promise you, trust and vet. Now, Dan and I have known each other. We went to the same high school. We have been lied to, manipulated, cheated, oversold, back end sold by the best of them. And the reason is we're accountable because we trust people. The best way you could trust people is to vet the crap out of them. Ask them the hard questions. When they say something that doesn't seem right, ask them for proof. Talk to people. If I would have trusted and vetted everyone, I'd be far beyond a billionaire today.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. I love that.
What keeps you busy now? What is Dave up to?
Well, first, busy is a bad word in my dictionary.
Right, I like it.
It means unavailable. Right? I got plenty of friends high on their mom's couch still at 55. Right. They're extremely busy. Never can help me at all. Me, I'm active. And so for me, what's keeping me most active is this idea that we now have a size, scope, and scale of an audience, as our friend here, the real Tarzan, knows, of hundreds of millions of people. See, one of the blessings I have of being older is, in Dan seeing this, I used to beg to get in front of 100 people.
Right.
Right. And now my team will tell me, I don't get to the hundreds of millions. Yeah. They'll tell me, Dave, sorry, the video didn't go well. I said, well, what do you mean? Well, it only had 40,000 views. And in my mind, I'm like, if somebody would pay me to go to Petco,
yeah,
right, fill up the stadium,
right,
to do a 5-minute video or even a 30-second speech,
yeah,
right, of my best piece of advice,
right,
I'm giddy. So, you know, providing content and capturing the right content keeps me busy. Modifying it correctly, which is essential, amplifying it correctly, and then perpetuating. I think one of the areas that I'm blessed as well to have experience in, I don't think enough young people understand the perpetual nature of content, of how it can build on itself and build your essence. So for example, I have a full-time employee. This is one of my secret sauces. All he does 7 days a week is go to your events, goes to networking, trade shows, and his whole job is, hey, what do you do? And he listens or not. Then he says, what do you like about it? Listens or not. Then he says, what don't you like about it? Then he says, hey, would it help you if you met my boss, David Meltzer?
Wow.
Third of the people say, love that dude. Yes. Well, not quite a third, maybe a 0.3%. And then another small percentage say, I hate that mofo. And then he gets an opportunity to say, hey, you should meet him now. He's a changed man. He's a lot better than he used to be. Good for me. But the majority of people say, who the F is David Meltzer? Then all he does is use my perpetual content and says, hey, use Instagram. The guy's like, no, Facebook or no TikTok. Here, look. Now I have perpetual stories, mm-hmm, and oh, I got it. That guy's awesome. Let me meet him. This is where people are falling down today. They don't utilize the perpetual nature. They're so concerned about getting, you know, one video popping. You can store and utilize perpetual data to help you even more than the real time.
So there's something that you started doing years ago that I've been obsessed with in my brain, and I actually bring it up at speeches often, is that when you do introductions, you have an agreement with people. And we've all been there before, like, hey, you should meet this person, and then they go off and raise millions of dollars, or they go do a 6-figure deal or a 7-figure deal, whatever, and then you get nothing for it. Sometimes that's okay because you're just doing it to introduce people, and other times it's for commerce is what I say.
Yeah.
If it's clearly for commerce, then I should make a percentage. If I'm just doing it for friendly, like, hey, Tarzan, meet Dave, and you guys go make a pet product, go for it. I don't care. But if I said, hey, put in $5 million into a pet product, then I'm involved, right? So what is this agreement that you came up with, and why do you do it, and how do you do it?
Well, it's evolved. It's called an overlap agreement. So Dan and I, especially in our lives, we know so many people, and our goal is to have them help each other.
Yep.
My goal is to build a community of people that want to help each other and know people who can help each other. Well, what I learned was, why not create a memorialization, not an agreement? I know I'm a recovering lawyer, but I don't want binding agreements, because that just makes people break promises. But I do like a memorialization that says, oh yeah, you met Dan in San Diego and he has a card shop, and we're going to, whether it's an email or an actual agreement that we sign, it's just a memorialization to me. And it says, hey, if you ever run on anyone that can give Dave Meltzer a speaking stage,
yep,
he's going to give you 20%,
yep,
even if we're friends. I don't care. Right. And if I bring someone to raise $200 million for Dan, he's going to give me a percentage. And we're family.
Right.
But what happens is if you don't memorialize that, especially because technology today is so searchable, I just have folders by categories so that when I'm in Nashville and somebody needs a dentist, right? Oh, I know a dentist.
Right.
And look, the guy gives me a $20 Starbucks thing for bringing him a client, or he doesn't. And then people ask me, what percentage do you use? I don't care. I'm motivated by, number one, who it is, and then two, how much I can make. So if I don't know two people and one person's offering me 20% and the other 10, I'm gonna pick the 20%.
Sure.
And if the person doesn't pay me, which happens, right? Sometimes people, you bring a business and it's just a memorialization.
Selective memory. Yeah.
Yep. You just get a raise from my overlap agreement. Right. You've just cost yourself far more for future business. So this is probably the most powerful business tool. And it went from six figures a year for me to seven figures. And I'm approaching eight figures a year. And sometimes I don't even remember that I referred it. And the people are so honest. I've gotten a $50,000 wire.
Just out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Wow.
And I forgot that I had referred the company, and they had raised like $50 million and gave me a marketing fee.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right. So we talked about how Dave makes money. How does Dave Meltzer invest money? Or how should the people listening invest money?
Well, once again, timing and risk tolerance is crucial. So many people, they'll ask me, to invest, and I'll ask them, what's the timing and risk tolerance of this deal? If they can't answer it, then I can't tell them, and I can't double check it and trust and vet it. So number one key is that timing and risk tolerance to invest. Then I also want to either know it really well myself or know someone that I trust that can tell me about it. So, if I'm investing in Everbowl, I don't know much about franchising, but I have so many people that could help me understand that investment that I would make. I also predetermine, this is different than most people, I predetermine investments every year. So when I go into, and I do charity as well. Yep. So I have a certain percentage that goes into conservative investments, meaning no chance of losing money.
Yep.
Then I have other ones in medium, and then the last one,
high risk,
right? I'm a gambler, but it's a small percentage. But as long as I make a lot, it could be a lot of money in the high risk side. I've had some huge years, and then those turn into, big lottery tickets. Well, I get better at doing it as well. So I think understanding, taking your emotions out of investment by predetermining the percentage and knowing your timing and risk tolerance, and then being an expert in what you're investing in or finding an expert, those are statistically the greatest ways. I owned a golf course. I knew nothing about golf course. Someone told me a great piece of advice after I lost all my money. It was worth $120 million, the golf course. Sam Snead's only design course. As a sports guy, it seemed like a great deal.
Yeah.
But he looked at me and said, "Hey, fool." I said, "Huh?" He goes, "You're supposed to be the third owner of a golf course, not the first." Now, think about how simple that advice is. Nothing's more true. In fact, Dr. J, who also was a first owner of a golf course, which is how we became really close friends because we commiserated together with the same mistakes, was told the same piece of advice.
Wow.
And it rang true. What if I would have asked that guy for help that had developed golf courses and knew from years of dummy tax, nobody wants to be the first owner of a golf course. You want to be the third owner. In other words, buying it out of bankruptcy after idiots like you have built it.
All right. I got an advice question. So influencers and celebrities, musicians, et cetera, they go through waves of money, right? So let's say Tarzan gets a $50,000 deal, and then February, nothing. Then March, $175,000 deal, and then April, May, maybe kind of quiet. And then boom, he gets a $250,000 deal and then goes quiet again for a month or two. When people have a wave of income, how could they be thinking about investing or saving?
Yeah, so two things. One, I think primarily if you have a wave of income, you also can create other streams of income so that you have a steady flow on top of the waves. And I think a lot of people cheat themselves and limit themselves when you have that much talent that you can start looking at other opportunities that will provide you a steady $10,000 a month plus the 50 bumps that goes on. But two, in order, savings are really important. Right. I mean, it's really not time. I call a dependent variable of all matter, subjective and objective matter. I know that's going to go over most people's head. I use time to determine how I can feel less guilty. So I might feel guilty, which is an interfering emotion. I have that problem, not just because of my religion. I literally feel guilty. I want to help everyone, but I just try to minimize the amount of time I feel guilty. Therefore, I'm going to be more productive. Same thing with savings. right? Time. How much am I going to save out of each amount of money I make? Now time becomes the dependent variable, because if you make 50 in January and 50 in June, but you save 10% of everything you make, you'll have the same exact saved as someone that made 10,000 every single month. Right. Mm. And so when we save, that provides the ability to transcend the months. Now, I also believe in an unemotional predetermined budget for living expenses, right? I believe we expand our money to what we think. So if I have percentages for a car, it's not what kind of car, it's just that's how much money this year I'm gonna spend 5% of my income on a car, or 0.5%, whatever you want. These all help you. And I'm telling you, especially now with an economy that's accelerating and changing so quickly, and some negative pressures as well, it's never more important to do an inventory of your expenses versus assets, right? We want to minimize the expenses and maximize assets.
Question. So you talk about saving. What should someone save? Say someone made $50,000. How much should they save of that?
So it depends on, number one, their timing and risk tolerance. Two, their age, right? So if I was young, I would say about, like, before 18, $100 a month is fine. Right, it's gonna aggregate. You know, if you save, but if you give your kid $100 when they're born and $1,000 on each birthday, when they're 18 years old, they'll have $2 million. Your money's going to double, and that's in conservative investment, right? A no risk IUL, right, annuity, something that is market free of any pressure. So, number one, you have to have your own percentage determined upon the investment in yourself. See, people talk about sacrifice. I used to tell people, I sacrificed so much. I went to law school. I borrowed $100,000. You know, all my friends were having fun. No, I didn't. You know, I know guys that slept in their car to build their business.
Right.
They didn't sacrifice. They invested in themselves. They actually believe in themselves more than anybody else. I'm betting on myself all the time and investing in myself. Savings is an investment in self. It's allowing you to build income at an exponential accelerated rate.
Wow.
So, influencer, 6 million on Instagram, millions on TikTok, etc. How does someone like Tarzan determine the price to charge to a brand?
Great question. Danny, this is one of my favorite ones in the world, because I have simplified this for everyone. The price that we start at, with no matter what we're doing, raising money, we're influencers, by the way. You know, I hate busy. I just got to stop this influence. There's too many influencers out there spreading the flu, spreading disease. They're standing in front of shit they don't own. They don't even know what they're talking about. Influencers are people who appreciate, acknowledge, and ask for more. People that are in the flow. You're inspiring people, and you're the real deal. So that's the real Tarzan. But more importantly, listen to this, everybody. If you know your bottom line going into any opportunity, then you can make up your perceived value, as long as you can articulate the perceived value to exceed what you're asking for. Doesn't mean you're going to get it. So, you know, I get paid six figures to speak. Do I get six figures all the time? No. If it's the Boy Scouts of America,
right?
And right, but I know my bottom line. I know if I'm going to the Boy Scouts of America in Syracuse, that they have to pay for my flights, my hotel,
right?
But I don't need $100,000. But when they ask me, how much is it to speak, David? Where I used to do the whole, it's a charity. Yeah. I'm $100,000. Why? Because I can articulate the value. And how would I articulate that in a charity? Look, if you hire me for $100,000 instead of Mike Tirico, who went to Syracuse, you're already selling the tickets. You're not bringing me on a stage to sell tickets. I'm not Tony Robbins. I'm not going to sell tickets for you. I will sell a mastermind for $25,000, those kind. But now I'm not going to sell a $200 ticket for you. I'm not that big. But what will I do? If you have me speak, I will inspire those people to give money. So instead of raising $2 million at your event, you're going to raise $4 million at your event. Can you see any reason you won't want to pay me $100,000 to speak at your event? That's my perceived value. Now, if they tell you, well, we only have a budget of $50,000, okay. Because my bottom line was flights.
Right.
So know your bottom line first, and you're set. Be able to articulate your perceived value to exceed what you're asking for, and you will exceed. I've had so many times where I've said $100,000 and they've said yes.
Right.
Right. I just went to Alula for 122 sports dignitaries during Qatar, the World Cup. And they're like, how much are you? $100,000. And I didn't say plus expenses, minus expenses, because usually the $100,000 includes the expenses.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Plus expenses. Right. I'm like, yeah, of course. So I undersold myself again.
All right. So we talked about how do you make money. We talked about how to invest money. Now let's talk about how does Dave Meltzer give away money and how do you think other people should give away money more effectively?
Oh, so you once again, trust and vet when it comes to giving, the same as receiving. You know, so many people don't necessarily do with the money that you give what they say. And that could be family members. It could be associates and it could be charities. And we see this all the time. So I just want to reiterate that giving and receiving are one. Trust and vet when you're giving and receiving. So I always find that that inventory of knowledge, desire, and skills are aligned with where I want to give. What's important to me? You know, and I'm blessed because I learned this from Lee Steinberg, who every athlete had to give back to a charitable purpose or cause that we represented at least. Now, you know, we had a boxer, Chris Areola, got his butt kicked by Klitschko in the championship fight. But he didn't have shoes when he was a kid. His mom made him put cardboard in them because he couldn't buy new shoes and it, you know, to cover the holes. So I said, dude, why don't you start a charity or give to a shoe charity? Mm-hmm. Right? These are, this is an emotional thing. You want to make sure that you're doing what's important to you. Know what you want personally, experientially, giving and receiving, who you can help and who can help you. And then how best to get that done and then prioritize by what's important to you, right? I have three daughters. I give, you know, chairman of Unstoppable Foundation in Kenya. We build villages in Africa. People ask me all the time, what about America? I do stuff. I'm chief chancellor of Junior Achievement University because entrepreneurship is important to me. I think all entrepreneurs are going to save the world. Mm-hmm. So we have 100 million alumni. I got nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize, 15 to 25 year old entrepreneurs. I give a ton of money and time to that cause. But I also have three daughters and I know the impact that that I was able to provide to my daughters. Well, in Africa, right, these girls have to carry water. They can't go to school. Then they marry them to some guy my age for a goat.
Yeah.
Right. Then they circumcise the women as well. Like I was like so just flabbergasted. And so that was a passion of mine. I know I've helped and support your backpack charity as well. Same exact reason. I do a ton for kids. All the big brother, big sister, boys and girls clubs, because that's important to me. Education's important. That's where I send my money. But I want to reiterate, I trust and vet because I have also been, you know, very loose about my giving and, you know, have put money towards things that I didn't think they were going towards.
So do you give more to stuff that you're emotional toward as well, too?
Yeah. So I predetermine emotionally once again every year because my two big charities are Junior Achievement and Unstoppable. So I predetermine whatever I make, that's my tithing. And then I think it's important also, though, to have a discretionary giving fund so that if you got to buy Girl Scout cookies, sponsor a golf tournament, that you have that money there as well. Too many people get guilted in and put themselves into a poor advantage because they're good people and they can't afford to give what they're giving. You can't give what you don't have. And then all of a sudden, they're not able to help anyone and they're asking for help because they overgave because they didn't predetermine percentage-wise what they're going to give. See, you make $100 and 10% goes to charity, you'll be fine. If you make $100,000, you'll be fine. If you make $1 million, you'll be fine. It has to be percentage, not amount.
I like that.
Why should brands and entrepreneurs have charity elements to their businesses and their lives?
Well, first of all, because it is the flow, right? You have to put your money into the flow. And so if you want to make more money, you got to give more money. If you want to give more money, you got to receive more money. So I think from my own abundant philosophy of a value add world, the minute you live in this zero sum game of giving and receiving, trading and negotiating. People do it all the time. You're creating resistance. I live in ease and flow, right? I know I'm happy, healthy, wealthy, and worthy. I'm constantly trying to figure out what I'm doing to interfere with it. So I think the number one reason that brands, entrepreneurs should have charitable purposes or causes tied to everything is because you'll receive more and give more. It's a flow of abundance. You live in a value add world. When you ask people for help, not only are you adding value to that person, but mentally you become a better investment of theirs. And you, it's not about this, you know, marketing, what do they call it? Angel marketing or the old term in marketing for charitable marketing. Mm-hmm.
Cause marketing.
Cause marketing. It's such bullshit. Look, people, they literally buy on emotion for logical reasons. And so if you're authentic in your giving and receiving, people are going to want to purchase or give to you so you can give to others. And they get a benefit of getting, you know, an extra pair of shoes or, you know, whatever else it is. Giving and receiving are so amazing. Let me explain why it works with branding. When you give, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, endorphins are released. When you receive, same thing happens. But why it's so big in branding is that those people who witness it, the same effect. So giving and receiving are the most viral of all viruses. And so when you witness it, you're actually helping your brand because you're elevating the frequency of your brand because people are getting an actual biochemical hit by witnessing the purchase and sale and giving that's done. That's why. It's not that, oh, you know, somehow logically they're like, well, or justifying it. It's not. It's energetic and it's in a abundant philosophy that allows you to do that.
So taking off the charity hat, putting on the marketing hat, got a couple questions there. So why is it that brands don't spend enough money on marketing, and why should they consider increasing their marketing budgets in general?
This guy's loaded with good questions, huh? This one's huge today more than ever. I've been teaching this philosophy, but it wasn't nearly as true as it is today. If you don't understand that the marketing dollars, if spent correctly, are an investment, not an expense. Why? Because the world has built itself around niche community. Do you know that Real Tarzan has a niche community? You talk about having 100 million views. That sounds like a lot. It is a speck comparative to the people that are actually available to him. So he has a niche community. And the more that he serves that community and builds that community today, I will guarantee one thing economically, that tomorrow it'll be more expensive to build your brand and community.
Right.
And the next day it'll be more expensive to build. It'll be harder, not just more expensive. It'll be more difficult. So if your intent of marketing and branding is to build a community that builds a community, there's nothing more. How do you think Apple's so big? Because guys like me were sitting on a plane with my IBM ThinkPad waiting for the virus to go down, and the idiot next to me with a Mac opened it right up, started working, and I'm like, dude, I wish I was an artist or a teacher. He's right. Like, no, we got Word and Power. I'm like, really? And he sold me on Apple the very first time, and guess what? I've spent millions of dollars, so have you and so have you, on Apple products,
for sure.
And I've never had one Apple salesperson sell me.
Right.
They've taken my order, made me wait in a freaking line to buy it or go online. I've never had millions of dollars, not like hundreds of, I've spent millions. That's what building a community is about.
You also worked with a lot of brands that sponsor events. Why is that brands should consider sponsoring more events?
So for several reasons. One, awareness. Once again, attachment, emotional attachment to the event itself, that they have a feeling. Remember what Maya Angelou says. It's what I dictate my speeches on. People don't remember what I say in my speech. I talk fast. I got a lot of highly complex things that I've studied in physics, metaphysics, and quantum physics, but I know they remember how they feel. And so when you go to a Super Bowl event or you go to an elevator event, you feel a certain way, and they remember how they feel, and they remember the brands that made them feel that way. So it's really important. But I also think that it's a great business development tool. I think one of the expertise that I have is called the Bug Light approach. In fact, I built one of the biggest global marketing, sports marketing companies with Warren Moon on this approach, which was if you bring the right people, celebrities, athletes, influencers, to an event, and you give to charity, then all the brands will come. And the business will quantifiably be able to be articulated greater than what the sponsorship is. Why? Because when you bring Warren Moon to an event, all the billionaires, millionaires, and entrepreneurs want to come and see Warren Moon, and the brands get to do business with them. Besides the branding, they actually now, you know how much it costs to get in front of a CEO of Sleep Number, right? Shelly Ibach, right? The same thing can be held with a podcast, but events, you have an opportunity to do millions of dollars of business by paying $100,000 to sponsor an event. And once again, people don't articulate quantitative value. There's two things that I teach people to do that change my life and theirs when we talk about this empowerment. One, practice getting people to call you back. 90-some percent of the people never call you back. If I can get, instead of 1 out of 10 to call you back, teach you to get 2 out of 10, I've doubled your sales.
Boom.
And given you more practice, which eventually will triple your sales. But the more important one than even getting people to call you back is to practice articulating quantitative value. Articulating, that means to tell the story. Because why? So many entrepreneurs, so many people in events, they just assume that you love what they have as much as you do, and you know as much about it that you do. And so they assume that you see the value. And then they wonder why you won't do it. It's obvious. It's perfect for them. Yeah, because you haven't been able to articulate the quantitative value to exceed what you're asking for. When I get in front of you and you're giving me $100,000 to sponsor an event, you're assured that you're going to make $1 million beyond all the other subjective bullshit.
Last question. For all the listeners that are out there that are fighting through the chaos that we're going to see in 2023, how do you make them feel calm amidst the chaos coming up in 2023?
Yeah, the way that we stay calm is to know what we're in control of. You're always in control of 3 things. You're never in control of tomorrow. I always say, if anyone out there can tell me exactly what's going to happen tomorrow, I know how to make billions of dollars. I'll share it with you. I'll give mine to charity. You can keep yours. So what do we look at? 1, you have control of your mindset. You give meaning to everything you see. You give meaning to past inflection points, defining moments, historical references. I've seen people interfere with their future because of the Holocaust that their grandparents were in. Why are you doing? Give it the meaning to inspire you towards your future, like Viktor Frankl. You give meaning, mindset. 2, you have control of how you feel. And all these things are intention. Do, say, think, believe, and feel. Finally, you have control of your handset. Too many people are extra milers. They go the extra mile every once in a while. And then when they're not where they want to be, they justify why they're not where they're at, because they went the extra mile 6 days ago. Mm-hmm. It stayed up till 2 a.m.
Right.
I'm an empty miler. I go the extra mile every day, every day, every day. And that's what you got to do. Mindset, heartset, handset. You have control of it. You don't care about what's going on out there, because I have complete control of everything in my future with my mindset, heartset, and handset.
Wow.
Wow.
This man is happy, healthy, wealthy, and worthy.
That's right. Well, help me figure out what I'm doing to interfere with it. My potential.
All right, guys. You are listening to Dave Meltzer, my guest podcast host, The Real Tarzan. Keep in mind, we need you to share this, like, comment, share with your friends so we can help inspire more people on how to make money, invest money, and give it away to charity. Thanks, guys. We'll see you soon.
Peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this edition of the Money Mondays, where we talk about 3 things. How do you make money? How do you invest money? And how do you give it away to charity? We have a great guest to ask about those things, because our guest knows about real estate, investing, e-commerce, exiting companies, buying businesses, and everything in between. He's also throwing his own event called WealthCon. Please welcome Mr. Ryan Pineda.
What's up, man?
How's it going?
Happy to be here, man. This is cool.
So the Money Mondays, we like to do a real quick 2-minute bio so we can get straight to the money. Tell us, who is Ryan?
Yeah, started out as a baseball player, got drafted by the Oakland A's, did not get to the big leagues, and had to become an entrepreneur by force, really.
Yep.
Not that I wanted to ever be one. Eventually started flipping houses and became successful at that. Ended up leveraging that into, you know, house flipping education, into social media, content creation, to starting other businesses like a tax firm. And, you know, now we're buying businesses. Yep. And we're raising capital, buying big apartment buildings and all these things now. So there's a lot happening.
Yes. Every time I watch your content, you have some of the best content on Instagram. Tell us, let's walk us through some of the ways that Ryan's World makes money, or things that you give advice on how people can make money from house flipping. You've done a lot of that.
Yep.
Is that something that people can do, or how can they learn about it? Like, house flipping seems like people want to do it, but a lot of times they don't know how to buy the lumber right, or how to get the right general contractor, or how to find the right house or the right loan. Like, what are some things people should consider when it comes to house flipping?
Yeah. So for those who don't know, I flipped over 500 homes.
Wow.
And we're still actively flipping. I think we've got about 30 or 40 right now here in Vegas.
Whoa. That's a lot.
So that's still, you know, a bread and butter business for me. And it was the first way I ever like made some serious money. That's how I became a millionaire. The thing that I'll say, there's 2 misconceptions about house flipping. The first is that you mentioned this, like the lumber, the contractor,
right.
Those are kind of the least important. The most important thing is getting a good deal, right? Because I meet a lot of contractors who are like, well, I want to get into house flipping. And it's like, yeah, you do know construction, but finding the deal and getting it, you know, 70%, 60% right. of value is the harder part. So number one, it's about the deal. And then number two, people think it's about the money. Like, oh, dude, I don't have the money to go buy the deal, even if I did find it. And it's like, no, dude, there's plenty of money out there. You know, there's guys like you and me who are just looking for deals.
Sure.
And we've got all the capital to go take them down if they're there. So, yeah, anyone can do it. You just got to get really good at finding deals.
What would you say is like the day job of Ryan? What are the main things that you like to work on throughout the week?
I think my day is split, or my week is really split up into three categories. So one is content creation. So I spend, you know, basically a third of my time just filming podcasts, making YouTube videos, making reels and all that. I spend another third of my time just kind of managing whatever day-to-day thing is needed from me to fulfill on whatever we've got. So maybe I've got coaching programs, maybe I'm taking business meetings, maybe I have to do, you know, whatever, right? Whatever the business needs, that's what I have to do just to, you know, make sure things are smooth. The third, I guess, of how I spend my time is working on basically like R&D, whatever new product or business is coming. So we're always launching basically new products, services, and businesses. I'm always looking at new potential deals to take down, whether it's real estate or a business. And yeah, a third of my time is just kind of looking at the future.
On the social media side, why do you spend so much time on content creation? Why is it important?
Well, you know, I didn't get into it until about 3 years ago. And up to that point, I was just kind of an entrepreneur who was doing really good at flipping houses and running real estate businesses. And the more I looked at it, the more I realized that all these content creators and influencers were in far better positions than I was, even though I was a better operator and a better entrepreneur. And I know that a lot of my friends who were really good investors and operators would hate on him because they'd be like, oh, that guy, you know, he doesn't even buy real estate. He doesn't do anything close to what I do. And I'm like, well, that guy is also smarter. Like he's in an industry that he doesn't have to work as hard or take as much risk. And the opportunities are going to come to him because he's known. And it just kind of clicked for me during COVID when just everything was shut down. It was like, well, what can you do with a business right now? Like they're shutting you down. And these content creators are out here making more videos, mm-hmm. getting more eyeballs because everybody's watching. And I'm like, dude, these guys can't even be shut down. This is where I need to be. So I started making content in COVID.
Huh. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. On the business side of things. So we talked about real estate. We talked about social media content creation. What else is like the business world for Ryan?
Right now I have a tax firm, so, it's called TrueBooks, and you know, we've got hundreds of clients mainly in the real estate and small business space. And so, that business has been growing really well since, beginning of 2020. And, you know, it's funny because tax is one of those things that I wasn't super excited about coming from the flipping and the education space, because like in flipping, you make big chunks of money.
Right.
In education, you know, if you sell high ticket, you make big chunks of money. In tax, you don't make big chunks of money, right? Like you're doing very labor intensive service based work on a tax return, which, you know, is definitely not the same as a house flip, and running bookkeeping and all that stuff. But what I've realized now, having we're in our fourth year now, and I've just noticed like there's no churn, like everybody,
right.
like they stay and it just keeps compounding over. And I'm like, wow, like this tax thing is like already now pretty big. And I can't imagine the next 5 years, as long as we keep doing a good job, what it's going to look like. So super excited about the tax company, because even with that, it makes everything else go hand in hand. Like if we're bringing people into our education, they need tax 1000%, and they're going to get it from somewhere. So why not us?
Right.
So, you know, tax is great. With education, you know, it started out as real estate education, but now we're launching so many verticals in education. So, I started a company called Wealthy Creator for teaching entrepreneurs how to create content, because so many people are like, dude, how'd you do it?
Right.
And I'm like, all right, here's the blueprint.
Yep.
And so we started that. and we're starting other verticals of basically our Wealthy brand. So we have Wealthy Business launching, which by the time this airs, maybe it's already out, right? And that's going to be for general entrepreneurs to teach them KPIs and hiring, firing, accountability, sales, marketing, all these like general entrepreneur things that have, you know, made us successful. And we're going to launch other verticals. And then we have WealthCon, which is, you know, kind of like an all-in-one event for entrepreneurs, content creators, and real estate investors. So we're really diving all in on the Wealthy brand for all these things. So yeah, you know, basically our funnel is, let's do a really good job on just giving people free social media content. You know, let's then provide an avenue for them to be a part of our community and to attend our events. And if they want our education, great. And then from there, let's give them the services we know they need. So tax as a service. Another one we just launched is Pineda Media, which is doing all of the content for them, right? Because we were teaching these entrepreneurs how to create content, but they're like, well, I can't find an editor. How do I find a producer? I'm like, all right, we'll just do it. And so we basically took our whole office here in Vegas, which you'll see, and we turned it into an entire studio. And so like we have different sets. We have like 100 person workshop space. We have my studio, and you know, I'm just hiring more and more staff and editors and other things, because I know that entrepreneurs are all going to create content whether they like it or not.
Right.
They're going to have to, whether they realize it today or they realize it a year from now. So, you know, we've got the media company. You know, we're in the midst of launching other real estate needed things like CRMs and you know, skip tracing and data services and all that. So, you know, we've got all that rolling. I've got an NFT project called Tykes, which was the number one project on OpenSea for a couple of days. So that was really cool. And that's all about real estate and tech. And so, you know, I think real estate and crypto and Web3 and, you know, even AI and all this stuff, I think that's going to be really big. And so I think there's going to be some moonshots happening there. You know, on the real estate side, we've got the what's it called, the house flipping business, Home Run Offer. We've got, you know, Pineda Capital for our commercial real estate, and then Pineda Ventures is going to be for buying businesses. So yeah, there's a lot going on, and there's like other things that we're looking into as well. But you know, I've started a lot of businesses. I've kind of kept the winners. I've stopped the ones that maybe weren't worth the time, or I don't like the industry or whatever. And I've kind of realized like my core focus at this point is real estate and education. Like, let me stay in those two lanes and like open up verticals in those two.
So on the education side, how do you choose on the coaching, like low ticket, medium ticket, high ticket? If someone out there is listening that wants to start coaching or teaching, or if they're ready for it or they're getting ready for it, well, how do people decide if that should be $200 a month, $50 a month, $10,000, $100,000? Like, how do they decide what the heck to charge?
You know what's funny is people, I don't know, it's funny because like I come from, I'll say like a brick and mortar background where I'm like, hey, you know, I flip actual houses here in Las Vegas and everything else. And then when I started doing education online, people started calling me a digital marketer. And I was like, what is that? And I didn't realize it was this whole genre of people that they just sell info and other things. I'm like, okay, I get it. And, you know, as I dove down that rabbit hole, I started understanding like what all these guys were doing. And I'm like, okay, so a lot of these guys start out as like fitness info people, and they're selling $20 things, $100 things. And then they realize like, oh man, I can't really sell $10,000 things in fitness. Let me jump up into a different niche. And then they sell, you know, higher ticket stuff in other niches, right? For me, you know, real estate is a niche where people understand it takes money, right? And real estate's also a niche where it's very easy to make your money back very quickly. It's like, yo, if something costs 20 grand to learn, but you know, your first deal can make you 20 grand and you have that skill for life, like it's a pretty good trade. So I think it all depends on what you're selling. It also depends too, you know, on your credibility, right? Like my credibility allows me to do that, right? And there's a lot of people who don't have credibility that, you know, ask for crazy things, and it's like, why would anyone pay you that? You haven't even done it, right? I think also, you have to think about the caliber of person you want to coach, because, you know, the people who like nickel and dime you for $100 or $500 are very different than the $50,000 people. The $50,000 people are way less headache. Like, they don't have time for it. So there's a lot of factors that go into it.
So we talked about a lot of different ways on how you make money. What about the investing side? I also noticed you got involved in rentals as well. Do you do Airbnbs, house rentals? Like, what is it you're doing in the rental space?
Yeah, so we have over 550 units that we manage right now. So that's a mix of my own just personal properties. You know, I've got rentals here in Vegas, you know, Airbnbs in Big Bear, California. You know, I've got multifamily, and then we have all the apartments we manage at Pineda Capital for our fund. So I'm basically everywhere when it comes to rentals. Now, as far as like investments go, for me anyways, there's two main things I'm focused on investing. It's number one, just more real estate, and number two, businesses, because those are the two areas that I understand really well. You know, I've invested a lot into crypto over the years, and I always lose because I kept starting in, you know, 2018, I buy at the peak and then I sell at the bottom. Then, you know, I buy at the peak and I sell at the bottom again, right? So like, I'm not necessarily, even though I have my NFT project, like the NFT project's focus is not like, oh, well, let's go flip NFTs and like catch the next alpha. It's like, no, like, let's go buy businesses and start businesses and things that the space will need. Like, I want to invest in businesses in the space, not necessarily Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. You know, even though I am a believer in Bitcoin, I think 20 years from now, 10 years from now, Bitcoin will be, you know, millions of dollars. But I'm just not an expert in it.
So on the investing side, like, why do you like real estate so much? Why are you so deep in it with 500 flips and 550 rentals? Is like, you're so much deeper than most people I talk to. Why do you choose real estate?
Well, I mean, it was the first thing I ever had success in, for one. But two, to me anyways, real estate is one of those things that, I mean, I think it's the safest investment, right? It's far safer than crypto or stocks or anything. Like, it's a tangible asset that, yo, you can see, you can feel, you can touch, you know, you can value add to it. You know, you run your numbers. If it makes money today, great. You know, even if valuations go down, it's still cash flows and you're making money. So I love it for that reason. I love it because it has leverage. You know, most other investments like stocks and crypto have different forms of leverage, but you know, the moment you get margin called, you're toast. Real estate, it doesn't work like that, right? Like, you get your leverage, and if you've locked in a great rate the last few years, then you have that forever, right? And so it's really cool. The other thing that real estate's great for is taxes. I mean, crypto and stocks do not allow you to have the tax benefits real estate does. I mean, with depreciation, it's just like the number one equalizer that other entrepreneurs don't get the benefit of. And it's funny because I see a lot of these digital marketers now and these info guys, and they're making a lot of money, and all of a sudden, you know, they have massive tax bills, and they're like, how can I lower the tax bill? And I'm like, well, you should have bought real estate. Like, that's how you lower it. There's, you know, unless you just want to go and dump all your money into investing into something for the business and, like, you know, whatever, real estate's the ultimate equalizer.
So why do you think it's important for people that are listening to be considering investing money into different categories?
Well, I think you got to do what you understand the best, right? So I understand real estate at a very high level because I've been in it for so long. You know, I got my real estate license in 2010, so going on year 13. And so everything else to me, I literally could not tell you anything about stocks. I don't know what's going on in the market. I saw the Silicon Valley Bank just like had a bank run.
It's unreal.
And I'm just sitting there thinking like, that's crazy. I don't know anything like why it happened.
It's literally crazy.
Yeah. But it's causing a huge effect in the stock market, right? And real estate's like, I mean, whatever. They had a bank run. It doesn't matter to us.
Right.
So yeah, I just understand real estate the best. But what I would say is, if you're looking to start investing in things, this is my philosophy. Okay. I have a thing I call make, manage, multiply. And, you know, for me, I don't think anyone should really think about investing until they figure out how to develop a skill to make at least 250 grand, right? Because I see like so many young people getting shiny object syndrome. They're like, oh, well, freaking, maybe I should put some money in Dogecoin. Maybe I should buy a rental property. Maybe I should, you know, go buy this stock. And I'm like, dude, maybe you should invest in you and figure out how to go make 250 at least, right? And then, you know, for us, the second stage is manage. And it's like, okay, now you've built this skill. Now let's build a business around this skill. And let's figure out how to manage people to do the skill for you. And for me, you don't really conquer that stage until you've done a business that's made seven figures, right? You hit that $1 million mark, you've got a legitimate business now, and you have this skill set of like, hey, you could always do the skill yourself and make great money, but now you also have a new skill set of how to build a business and manage people. From there, then investing comes to play with multiply. So, you know, now that you have a business and money, let's multiply it. Let's start investing in things. Let's double down into the business and invest in the business. Let's invest into more employees, into more marketing, into, you know, an RV so we can go start a podcast, right? Like these are all investments that you can make. And I think that they're investments you make after the fact of you figured things out. Like, I don't know about you, but when I was broke, I wasn't looking at investments.
No.
I'm like, dude, I got to figure out how to make money.
For sure.
Yeah.
So the concept of the Money Mondays is we all grew up thinking it's rude to talk about money. Our family said that, our friends said that, our school said that, and I think it's the opposite. I think it's rude to not talk about money. I think the reason we're in financial crises and that we have so much credit card debt, and you hear about celebrities and athletes, you know, going bankrupt 5 years after they leave the NFL or NBA, et cetera, like all these stories, it's because we just don't have these conversations about money. What are the things you do since you are in the education space? What can we do to make people feel more comfortable talking about money?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I'll tell you this. I think social media has definitely helped normalize talking about money.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, I got super inspired by watching these guys on YouTube like Graham Stephan and Meet Kevin, because they were in my space before I was in it. And I remember them talking about how much they made from YouTube. And that's, I was like, these guys are making $200,000-$300,000 a month from just being YouTubers. And I was like, what? These guys make that much money?
Right.
They don't even flip houses. Like, they don't even run a business. They're just turning on a camera and making videos. It's crazy. And I was, instead of like being like, dude, what freaking whatever, I was like, dude, that's so cool. I want to do that. And so, you know, it inspired me to do it. And then, you know, I was always even uncomfortable still talking about things, right? Because it's just how it is, right? And finally, I was just like, you know what? Whatever. If people hate on me for it, it is what it is. And so I'd be like, all right, you know, here's how I made $100,000 on this house flip. Here's how much money I made last year. And here's like how I made it and all these things, right? And so, you know, I kind of now at this point, because my life's just out there and people know I make money, it's not a big deal, but I understand it's super difficult for people to go out on a limb, you know, and put it out there. So I think that you just got to realize it's a good thing. Like, as long as you're coming from a place of like, yo, I want to inspire people and help people, like, I think it's good to talk about money. I think too, it's going to help your business. I mean, by me talking about money, it makes me more money.
Sure.
So it's like, okay, why wouldn't I do this, right? So I think you got to change your mindset that way. And then, you know, three, I think you just have to realize that a lot of people, they'll get more comfortable talking about it as you talk to them. Like I asked, the first thing I asked you before we filmed on the show, I was like, hey, dude, you know, I seen that ranch that you live in. That's sick. How much did it cost? And you told me. And I was like, okay, you know, like that's pretty, you know, attainable for what I thought it would have cost, you know, especially being in California. I'm like, that's actually like not bad for California, you know, considering I'd thought about it before, but I just never knew what they cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we talked about some of the ways to make money. We talked about some of the ways to invest money. Now let's talk about the charity side, about giving it away. Why do you think that charity is important, and why should entrepreneurs either bring it into their business or bring it into their personal life?
Yeah. So for me, I'm a Christian and I grew up in the church, and, you know, ever since a young age, my parents were like, hey, you know, we tithe 10%. And I just over time, like it was just natural. I was like, all right, you know, every time I make money, when I became an adult, I just give 10%. And for me, it was just kind of like, this is what you do. And then over time, I realized, I'm like, wow, people don't do this. Most like Christians don't do this, right? I think the stat is that in the church, Christians give 1% of what they make. And it's like, okay, so you basically have a lot of people giving zero, and then you have a lot of people probably giving a lot more than 10%, right? And so then I heard this concept of reverse tithing. And, you know, you got these guys who they live on 10% and give 90% away. And I was like, wow. And then, you know, you see just like what these billionaires are talking about with like giving the majority of their wealth away and all this stuff. And, you know, regardless of what you think about Bill Gates and whatever he's really doing, I don't know. But point is, generosity is really important. And what I'll say about this is, you know, money kind of just amplifies what you already are. So if you're, say, a person who's not generous, you don't want to give to charity or anything, even when you're not making money, I don't think that you all of a sudden just develop a generosity muscle. Like, it's something that, for me anyways, like when I was playing minor league baseball, I was making $1,200 a month. That's what I lived on.
Wow.
But I was still tithing $120, which was, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you look at it, you're like $100 is not a lot of money, but it felt like,
for sure. And $1,200, it's huge.
It's a huge amount of money, right? But then, you know, you think about it and you're like, okay, well, if I make $1,000,000 and I go give $100,000, it's like, well, a lot of people who don't make $1,000,000 would say, well, dude, I mean, you made $1,000,000. $100,000 is not a lot. And you're like, dude, $100,000 is $100,000. Yeah, it doesn't matter, right? Go make $10 million, go give $1,000,000. $1,000,000 is a lot of money to give. And so for me, I've just kind of always given in proportion to my income, at least at a minimum 10%, always to Christian causes and churches and everything. And then it's always been above and beyond too for just other things. So it's like, man, my friend's got a charity helping this thing. All right, dope. Let me give to that. You know, my other friend's doing this. And so, that's always been my aspect of giving. And, you know, for me as a believer, like, I think that's one of the talents that God's given me, is like, all right, if you're going to be a business guy who has influence and makes money, what are you going to do with it? Because you can only buy so many things. For sure. Like, and another investment's not going to make my life better. Like, is owning one more rental property going to change my life? No, but like, is helping that person, you know, with whatever need they have, like, that's far more impactful.
So similar to the way that people grew up thinking it's rude to talk about money, we have a visceral reaction to be worried or self-conscious about posting about charity or talking about charity.
Mm-hmm.
Because people say, oh, it's not really charity if you show that you did it, or it's rude if you show that you did it, etc. I think the polar opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I want as many people as possible to post about charity because I want charity to be cool. I want it to be mainstream, and I want it to be easy to do.
Mm.
And so I'm constantly posting about charity related things because I want people to replicate me. Mm. I want them to do their own toy drive. You don't have to donate to mine. I want you to do your own Thanksgiving food drive.
Yeah.
You don't have to donate to mine. I want you to make backpacks for the homeless.
Right.
You don't have to donate to my charity. I want people to replicate me at scale on the things that they like. Did you like toy drives? Do you like homeless backpacks? Do you want to help the kids? Do you want to help women abuse shelters? Do that. And to me, the butterfly effect is I now see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people tagging me in charity-related things that they're going and doing their own. What can we do to make the conversation different so that people feel comfortable talking about money and posting about charity?
That's a good question, because I even struggle with that one. So I have no problem talking about making money, but I am very apprehensive about talking about how much I give and things I do. You know, I'll take a step out in faith and just say, like, so last year we bought a church, right? And that was a big thing. Like, I've never even said it on my own show, just because I'm like, it doesn't, I didn't buy it to like talk about it.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but like, that is a thing that happened, and it's like, man, yeah, you're right. It's probably good for people to know that that happened.
It is good.
And it's even uncomfortable for me talking about, cause I'm like, cause I'm not doing it for that reason. But to your point, if I do talk about it and I do showcase what I'm doing, just like I showcase what I'm doing with you know, my business is, it is going to have a positive effect. And there will be haters, but whatever.
The haters stem from them growing up thinking or hearing that it's rude to talk about it the same way it's rude to talk about salary. If you said, hey, right now, if we went to dinner and I said, hey, what are you paying for your vice president? And you're like, oh, I'm paying them $80,000 to $100,000. I might have gone and paid them $130,000 and I overpaid because I had no idea that you could pay $80,000 to $100,000. Vice versa, let's say one of your kids that's listening wants to go get a job and they're 18 years old and they're supposed to be an account manager at a company that makes $42,000 to $48,000, and they go and get $36,000.
Right.
Because they had no idea to ask for $42,000 to $48,000 because the parents didn't talk about it. Nobody's talking about it. And so I'm on this admin mission driving this RV freaking motorhome around the country to make people talk about money. It is so important for people to be able to ask about salaries. It's right. So important to ask, did you rent your car? Did you lease it? Did you buy it? Like,
right.
I want to do a fix and flip and I want to ask Ryan about it, but I don't want to say how much did you make if I only have $60,000 saved up. Can I do it?
Right.
Because it's weird to talk about it. It's awkward to talk about. I want to change that conversation.
Well, you know, it's funny about the $60,000 thing. Like, just use that as a perfect example. There are people I meet who say just that, like, I only have $60,000. Like, I can't flip a house. I'm like, dude, that's so much money. Right. Like, I got started with $10,000, right. You know, like, and $10,000's a lot of money. You can get started with no money. Like, and people don't know that there because it's just not talked about.
It is our job. It is our duty, and especially with you, since you make so much content, to make people feel comfortable. And I think it's so important for our society, not just now, but again, the butterfly effect of what that does for more and more people. Because if more and more people make more money, more and more people do more charity, the butterfly effect of that goes around the world.
You know, I'll tell you this too, with charity, and I was talking about Christians and faith, like talking about money as a Christian is also like an even bigger double-edged sword. Right? Because people are like, oh, well, freaking, why is this guy talking about this if he believes this and all that? And so, you know, anytime I've talked to a lot of my friends who are believers, they're like, dude, you know, I just appreciate what you're doing because, like, I've learned a lot about money because nobody talks about it. And, like, especially pastors and people in the church, because it's just taboo. You cannot talk about it. And so I think it all goes hand in hand, right? Like, I mean, the church is a charity. All these other charities, like talking about money, raising money is taboo. It's like, no, like, you know, this charity is doing a good thing. They need, you know, we got to go raise this money. Sure. Let's go do it.
Yep. All right. Last question. So we're in 2023. There's a lot of craziness in the media. There's a lot of people nervous and scared of what's going to happen with our economy, the recessions and all the different buzzwords that are happening across the country. How can people stay calm throughout the chaos that's coming up?
You know, I think there's a few things. I mean, for me, one, I've already talked about it a lot, but faith. It's like, man, dude, this life on earth is like very short and limited compared to the span of eternity. So if you believe there's something happening after our time on earth, then it kind of makes like the problems during our time on earth very small because it's like, this is short. Eternity is infinitely larger. So I think having proper perspective plays a big role. I think that, two, not just buying into what the media or people say, right? Everyone's got some kind of agenda, whether even it's good or bad, right? And so I think, I don't think anyone trusts the media anymore, period, right? So I don't think you should worry about what freaking CNN says or even what Fox says or what this happens or that happens. Like, you shouldn't care what Biden is doing. Like, it doesn't matter for you.
Right.
You can it's so minuscule to impact you, right? Like, people getting up in arms about capital gains tax and stuff. It's like, may never even happen, number one. Number two, you're probably not even making enough for it to even qualify you. Like, people worry about crap that doesn't even affect them. So I think that's a thing. I think other than that, just having like confidence in what you're doing that, hey, you know what? If there is a recession and, you know, banks collapse or whatever, like, I actually have skills to go create value in the world and that I'll be fine, right? Because I'm not dependent on what the government does or what's happening in the stock market. Like, I have skills that generate value for the world. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier with make, manage, multiply. Like, you got to learn how to make, you know, 250K at least. Because if you can make that, you'll be fine, you know, in any circumstance. That's why I love house flipping, because it's like, dude, rain or shine, you can flip houses. You know, people are like, well, what happens if the market goes down? I'm like, it's like, well, we just saw a slow market the last 6-7 months, right. And you know, now it's back heating up, and you know, people made money in the slow market, people make money in a hot market. Like, if you know how to flip a house, you can go make money.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Ryan Pineda here on the Money Mondays. Make sure to follow him across social media accounts. Now, keep in mind, I do have one request, just like on every show. Please help us make this conversation about money go mainstream. Share the podcast with people, share it with your friends, talk to people about money so we can carry this conversation forward and get the butterfly effect. Go visit themoneymondays.com, check out Ryan across social media, and we'll see you guys soon.